This is Self Work, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At Self Work, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work. But too many of us, our guilt very easily turns into shame. Now, what's the difference? Guilt is about an act or a lack of an act. Shame says you're a bad person because you did that or didn't do that. Shame makes you bad. And that can grow and grow and become the real problem because shame is paralyzing. Welcome to this week's edition of Self-Work. I recently heard myself say something so irrational that I had to stop and start laughing at myself. What was it? I'd accepted an offer to do something, and I just quickly said to my husband, "Oh, it'll look good on my resume." Now, I have a book, a TEDx, this podcast, I'm working on another book, and I'm 70 years old or almost. I'm no longer working on my resume. That was ridiculous. But you can hear that underlying sense of needing to achieve, to have a record of some sort of achievement, as if I was still actively building my career. I mean, I had someone tell me they thought it was cute because at least I'm my age and still going strong, but still it was ridiculous. And it was amusing to realize how much that my own sense of needing to prove something to somebody, that was my immediate thought. So I share this somewhat embarrassing detail as an intro to what we're going to talk about today, what's called productivity guilt or productivity. This is guilt that somehow you're not doing enough, accomplishing enough. And then we're going to challenge how you think about productivity, busyness and rest, relaxation, getting away. Our email today comes from a listener whose message was about her struggle with a shopping addiction. She'd lied about it and how that dynamic was affecting her relationship, which of course was painful to read. But her real question is really more about forgiveness and the restoration of trust. Once trust is lost, can it be restored? I think so, but maybe not in this listener's case. Let's first hear today from one of our very first sponsors and a premier sponsor of Self-Work, BetterHelp. BetterHelp has long been a sponsor of Self-Work and a great one. And of the several online therapies out there, they by far have the most highly rated. In fact, I looked it up to make sure. And Forbes has BetterHelp rated more highly over both Talkspace and online therapy, the other major online providers. Now, you might be asking yourself, so why would any good clinician want to work for an online service? Let me tell you, those clinicians don't have to take care of all the business details, the paperwork, the insurance filing, the scheduling service, none of it. I myself have been approached by BetterHelp several times to join their network. And when I saw the benefits, frankly, if I hadn't already had too much on my plate, I would have joined. You can communicate through text, chat, video, or phone, whatever is most convenient and works for you. And the number one problem that so many people face when considering therapy, that problem is taken care of for you. What is it? How do I find someone? The BetterHelp website asks you questions, you answer them, and then they find a therapist that fits best for you in your area. If you have one session and don't get much out of it, all you have to do is let them know and the process starts over again. It's private, professional, convenient, and affordable. These are licensed professionals, someone who's put years into their training so that they can best help you. And so much of the hassle is taken care of for you. They now have 35,000 clinicians in their network, up from 25,000. So now is your time to choose BetterHelp. And if you use this link, betterhelp.com/selfwork, you'll get 10% off your first month of sessions. It's betterhelp.com/selfwork. I promise you, good therapy helps. I know. I've been there. It helped me, and it can help you. Y'all know about me that my work, what I do to make a living, is my felt purpose. They're just one and the same. So I'm very, very lucky. Because when I'm away from seeing patients or writing or podcasting, I really miss it. I miss the energy of it. Now, sometimes it feels like work, obviously. But there are vast amounts of people, and you or someone you love may be one of them, that feels guilty when the goals they've set for themselves aren't being met. And to make it seem worse, they can identify things they're choosing to do or think or feel that are sabotaging those supposed efforts. You might be one of those people who never feel or rarely feel as if you're doing enough. I found a Psych Today article written by Dr. Mark Travers, we'll obviously have the link, that outlines these problems. Maybe you say something to yourself like, I'm not able to wake up early. I feel like I'm missing out on the most productive hours of the day. I know I waste entirely too much time watching TV or these days maybe scrolling, but I can't seem to help it. Whenever I need to get something done, I have an almost irresistible urge to do something else instead of what I should be doing. What is wrong with me? And what Dr. Travers says is that this is caused by productivity or productivity guilt. And here's the definition of that. Productivity guilt is a mindset that makes a person feel bad about themselves for not working hard enough and for not being able to achieve 100% of their goals, especially career goals, every day. Now, let's take apart this definition if we can. First, how do you measure whether you're working hard enough? Now, you can wear a Fitbit or some kind of Apple Watch to determine how fast your heart is beating during exercise. You can measure that quantifiably, right? But how do you quantify a work ethic or simply trying your best? That's not a tangible thing. And who's defining work ethic anyway? It so depends on your age, your environment, your job, how much control you have over what you're doing. I love that millennials and those younger are saying, no, I'm not going to sacrifice my mental health for a nose constantly to the grindstone, little to no time with family and friends. Those very harsh, very success at all cost kind of belief systems rob so many of enjoying their kids and relationships and time for themselves. So my first point was, how do you measure whether you're working hard enough anyway? Here's number two. Who in the world can achieve 100% of their goals every day? Even perfectionistic people like I reach out to with my work on perfectly hidden depression would likely never fit this ideal. Why? Because they'd add a few things on that weren't on the original list if they got them done because, well, I got them all done. I must not have challenged myself enough. They're on a constantly running treadmill, never catching up to their own perfectionistic expectations or others' expectations that they feel they must meet. It's a never-ending cycle. But then the third aspect of this troublesome mindset is the guilt. Because there are far too many people, and I've been one of them, maybe you're one of them, who doesn't simply feel guilt, which is remorse over an action, or in this case, perhaps inaction. No, you feel guilt, and then to get rid of it or let it go, whatever language you want to use, you make amends of some kind. You say you're sorry. You get up early the next day and get it done. You decide you've got too much on your plate anyway, and you take some off. You do something to let that guilt go. But too many of us, our guilt very easily turns into shame. Now, what's the difference? Guilt is about an act or a lack of an act. Shame says, you're a bad person because you did that or didn't do that. Shame makes you bad. And that can grow and grow and become the real problem because shame is paralyzing. Or trying to hide shame through doing a lot of work or being perfect or making a lot of money or avoiding people or isolating or putting off things. Shame becomes a huge problem and it's far more poisonous than guilt. This same article, Dr. Travers' article, quotes Bill Gates as saying that people overestimate what they can get done in a year, but underestimate what they can do in 10 years. I love that quote. So what does it mean? And why is it important to our conversation? It seems that what he's reminding us is that accomplishment or a sense of accomplishment, when you can see how your choices and hard work paid off, takes time to emerge. And we can get overly absorbed in the success or failure of today or this week or this month or even this year. You know, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to take wrong turns. But with time, this 10-year mark may hold a lot more information for you about how your efforts, if indeed they remained important to you, how you should measure them. So as I read all this, I wanted to give you 9 reminders about how to keep your energy going, to stay in the present, not let guilt turn into shame, and how to see yourself as someone who not only does enough, but is enough. So here are my own 9 reminders. 1, cell phones and the internet have brought with them immediate gratification, immediate knowledge. It's very cool. I want to tell you a story about a teacher I heard and their students. The students were trying to talk this teacher into just giving them the answers to these tests. And they said, you know, you'll look good. We'll look good. It'll be fine. And she said, I can't do that. This is a test. This is school. You need to learn. And they all held up their cell phones and they said, we got this. We can immediately know what we need to know. That is a shame. But you know what? Attaining goals in life isn't a quick fix. It takes time. It takes learning from experience, making mistakes, getting back on the horse, as they say. Sometimes your ego is going to be bruised and you'll lose faith in yourself. None of that is bad. It's normal. It's part of you realizing you're good enough. So I guess my point is that even though you've got answers on your cell phone, you also need to let yourself grow into your own knowledge and experience, and that takes time. Here's another reminder, 2. You can't avoid risk. You can try hard to avoid it, but that'll likely leave you frustrated. You've got to understand the power of your own mind and your belief in yourself. In fact, that's what Dr. Jim Doty was talking about last week. Go listen if you need to. He was talking about manifestation. But seeing yourself as having potential, dreaming, if you will, is a good thing, but it involves risk. And some people are, and maybe you're one of them, are scared to risk, but you can't avoid it if indeed you want to reach your goals. Here's the 3rd reminder. Know that your belief in yourself, in your project, in your ability will wax and wane. But even if that's true, try not to compare to others, especially at times when you've been disappointed. Ask anyone who's achieved some kind of success, and they'll have a story about a time when self-doubt was huge. I think I've shared with y'all, I was fired from my first therapy job. I mean, asked to go get my plant and leave. But when you're in the middle of self-doubt, everyone else can seem to have it figured out. Everyone else can seem to be way far ahead of where you are. And you can say to yourself, you know, I'll never be enough. That's what's called a global irrational thought, however. Here's the global part of it. When you say, I'll never be enough, it's because you're saying, I don't feel enough today, so I'll never feel like I'm enough. You globalize, you take what's in the present, and you make it last into the future like it's a done deal. Instead of that, you can say, today, you know, I doubt that I'll be enough, but tomorrow is another day, and I'll get more information tomorrow. When my mom talked about menopause, she called it the change, and it was all very hush-hush, as if there was something wrong about something so natural. Thank goodness with mental health awareness and actual research, we're beginning to understand the huge role hormones play in women's bodies. Being postmenopausal has its challenges, but if you're going through either perimenopause or menopause, then I suggest you try Hormone Harmony. Why? Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now here's the beauty about them. They help the body adapt to stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code SELFWORK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code SELFWORK for 15% off today. All right, here's the 4th reminder. You know, there's a country song that's called Live Like You Were Dying. And it's, you know, it tells this sad story about somebody who found out he was going to die. And then, of course, you know, he tells his mom he loves her every day and he goes skydiving and he does all this stuff. Now, that whole phrase, live like you were dying, may seem contradictory to what Bill Gates said. Remember the part about you can overestimate what you can do in a day, but underestimate what you can do in 10 years. Most of us will, of course, not live through knowing that some kind of illness we have is terminal. Most of us wouldn't want to be in that position. But It does remind you that life is a process, not a product. Let me say that again. Life is a process, not a product. And if you can enjoy the process of life of every day, it's a great attitude to have and really fights that productivity guilt, okay? Did you enjoy the way the day went? Or maybe it didn't go so well, but at the same time, it has value to you. Now, here's my fifth reminder. Ask for help. Depression and anxiety hit successful people as well as people struggling to feel successful. And you can be triggered by that comparison. Why am I even trying? Or I may look successful, but gosh, I feel so empty. If you hit a roadblock, if you become depressed or anxious for whatever reason, there are people who can help, who want to help. You know, in my TEDx, I talked about how suicidal thinking is really much more common than we realize. Feeling down, feeling depressed, feeling lost, feeling like you have no more energy. That's very common too. We're not energizer bunnies. So if you get depressed or anxious, ask a friend for help. Ask someone you admire for help. Ask a therapist for help, whatever you need. Here's my sixth reminder. I'm going to tell you a little story. I once had a male patient who told me he trusted no women, which I thought was interesting because he'd come to a woman for therapy. And he had been hurt badly in his marriage. That was very true. But I asked him about his friends. Oh, they all hate women too. And I kind of thought to myself, this is a problem. Because he was finding support for staying in a very irrational place. Again, that global thinking, you cannot trust any woman. So I think my sixth reminder is to become aware of how the people you're hanging out with either support you in a really good work and play or rest balance, and you're much more likely to feel, hey, I'm enough when you take some time off that productivity treadmill because you respect the fact that your support network, that they work hard when they do and they play and rest well as well. So being aware of who you're hanging out with, their impact on you. Here's sort of the opposite. You may be hanging out with people whose addictions, for example, are getting in their way of their productivity or finding their purpose. They stay high all the time or are always nursing a hangover. Now, this group may feel safe to you, like you don't have any pressure. I get that. I'm mostly, again, suggesting that you become more aware of the impact that people you're hanging out with have on you. Number seven is highly related to number six. You might be in a relationship now where your partner is abusive and hands out the message frequently. You're just not enough. There's something wrong with you that you never measure up to their expectation. This can also come or did come in the past from a parent, and you may be carrying that around with you. But you can absorb this message, and that can put you in trouble. You got to learn to challenge that, and I know it's hard. I've been there. One of my exes used to say to me, you better stay with me because if anyone else got to really know you, and I don't remember if he finished the message, but the import of it was clear. He was the only person who could put up with me because of my faults. And that's a trauma bond. If you're in one, I'll include a link for the episode on trauma bonding. It's a crazy and hurtful place to be, but you can lose faith in yourself and your goals and your productivity because you're told you're not much of anything anyway. Here's number eight. There's a big difference in what's called a rigid mindset, where you know what you know, and that's it, and a growth mindset, where you believe that you know what you know, but you can also grow and learn. Sort of a more subtle aspect of a rigid mindset is that you may have decided, you know, I don't really have the capability of learning. So that can be translated in your life as avoidance or even laziness. I don't want to try because I don't think I can do it. So do you believe you can learn? Remind yourself of what you have learned to do. Everything you know to do now, you didn't know what to do before. You've learned to do everything you know how to do. So I think it's important to realize that you can have a growth mindset. That what you know is vital and it's important. And there's so much more out there to learn. And here's number nine, or my ninth reminder. You ask yourself, am I living my values? Now, what do I mean? For the next few seconds, I'd like you to write down or just think of three things that you try to be, three ways of being that are important to you, three of your top values. Maybe that's, I'm generous, or it's important for me to be kind, or I'm really hardworking, or I love to make people laugh. Then think about yesterday or the day before that. Did the decisions or the choices you made reflect your value? Sometimes the values that we're actually living by are more complicated. They're things like, I need to feel in control, or I've got to get ahead. And really, okay, you're being aware of what's motivating your life, and that's the first step. But there's something about living out your values that I think is so important. This is a part of often what I do with couples who are arguing and bickering and really hurting one another. And I'll ask them to write down their values. And then I ask them, would I guess that from listening to a conversation or an argument that you're having with your partner or your kids? Would I know what your values are? Most of the time, what happens is that we've gotten away from our values. And you know what? That's where a huge part of self-work is figuring out, am I living out my values, or am I living in fear or anger or sadness? And what do I have control of? Maybe not everything, but what do you have control of? I hope those reminders are helpful to you. The email for today is from a woman who has a more complicated problem. Thank you for having this self-work platform where people can reach you and share their struggles. I have listened to a couple of podcast episodes. There's plenty more I want to go through. However, currently I'm in a very low mood, and for a while now, I feel hopeless about my husband and our future together. My husband doesn't believe in couples therapy or therapy in general, so I'm in the process of trying to find a therapist that fits, but it's been hard. There's so much jumbled in my mind, so I apologize if I can't keep things organized. First, I lied to my husband about my shopping habits twice. First time this happened, it could have ended our relationship, but my husband felt that possibly he wasn't the most supportive toward my struggle with shopping, and hence I felt the need to hide it. So he forgave me, which is admirable because he did look at the context, which is important for our later discussion. So he forgave me and said to never lie again. I tried to keep myself under control and even started lying to myself or coming up with excuses to justify my shopping. Ultimately, I didn't figure out my root cause, so I started lying again. I felt very guilty, but felt I couldn't tell my husband either. I'm trying to work through the root of my shopping problem. I haven't bought anything unnecessary for the past 4 months, but he's having a hard time moving on from this. It's the big elephant in the room, even if we're talking and things seem to be normal. Number two, he no longer feels he can support me in my career. We had moved so I could attend graduate school, but this move was difficult for both of us as we dislike the city we live in. He feels like he's made so much sacrifice to support me, and I return the favor by lying. He associates everything he has done in my career to the trauma of me lying to him. So why should he do what I ask? And here's number three. He also feels that I don't put enough effort into doing things with him. From my point of view, I bring up suggestions and ideas, but he turns them down. He would say he isn't feeling it, weather conditions aren't good for that, would it be worth driving out that far, etc. When I hear that, I drop the idea. Over time, I gave up altogether because I was tired of getting turned down. He told me again today that I don't give enough effort to try and make the suggestion seemed more interesting or plan out an itinerary that would be interesting to him. I appreciate that he finally told me this, but it took multiple months of talking or not talking in order to get this out of him. He has said in the past this shouldn't have to spell everything out in our relationship. As of right now, it feels like we're speaking two different languages and we can't understand each other's perspective. I feel like we are in this mess because of me and like I will no longer have a real say in our relationship. I'm just so conflicted and lost. Wow. And I only read about half of her email. She had other examples in there, but I thought that what I shared with you was at least the kernel, the most important part of what she said. You can see quite easily, I assume at least, how this listener's question, her conflict and feeling so lost, has to do with her shopping addiction and her struggle with it. But this story is just as much about trust. I'm very aware we're only hearing this story from her perspective. I get that, and I'm sure his would be very different. But I'm hearing huge relationship mistakes. In fact, all four of the famous Gottman's Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, that's Gottman, G-O-T-T-M-A-N, they are famous marital therapy researchers. What these four traits are things that if they are found in a partnership or a marriage, it predicts divorce. Criticism, defensiveness or a sense of victimization, stonewalling, refusing to communicate for long periods of time, and the expression of contempt. And all of them are present in her marriage. I understand that actually they're both lost. He's the wounded one. She's the perpetrator. He can't forgive. She carries shame. Now, is her addiction and lying about it a problem? Of course. But do couples work through these kinds of things? Yes, all the time. You know, I do hear that her husband at first tried to understand, hey, maybe I wasn't supportive enough. I didn't understand why this was such a problem for you. But then understandably, again, in some ways, he drew a line in the sand and said this could not happen again. And then when it did, or when she struggled with it, which again is a little bit naive when you think about an addiction, but it does seem like they're very stuck in, you lied to me and I can't forgive you and I can't trust you. And now you must prove to me how important I am to you. And I don't think you can do that. I don't know if there's a way. In fact, I doubt that there's a way really to prove to someone that they're important to you, because you can always up the ante. So hopefully you can hear the complications of this. They're really, really stuck. I wish he'd go to therapy with her, but I definitely recommend that this listener go to counseling herself. At least she can begin to get more clear about this chaotic dynamic between them and only take responsibility for what is hers. Work on letting go of her own shame. I am honored to announce to you that my TEDx seems to have gone viral. It had 80,000 views last month. Again, it's How to Recognize Perfectly Hidden Depression. It's on YouTube. All you have to do is put in TEDx, Dr. Margaret Rutherford, and you'll get there. Or I tell you what, I'll put a link in the show notes for you. Where I'm going with that, it's really not the amount of views. It is the comments. I think next week I'm going to feature some of those amazing comments, the vulnerability of them, the rawness of them, the understanding that perfectionism can camouflage, or the perfect seeming life can camouflage really despair and such loneliness. It is the message to me that's important. And I am ironically, in some ways, thrilled that the message is getting out there, because we've got to be more transparent with one another about what we're carrying around in our hearts and minds. Thank you, as always, for being here at SelfWork. You can join me at my Facebook group at facebook.com/group/selfwork. Subscribe at drmargaretrutherford.com, and you'll get one newsletter every week, Monday morning typically, with my podcast episode and my blog post and anything else that's happening. It is the easiest by far way of keeping in touch. And of course, my book, Perfectly Hidden Depression, is available everywhere you can buy books. So again, my gratitude to you. Please take care of yourself, your loved ones, as well as your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been SelfWork.